think all these mandates are incredibly confusing.
If you're confused and feel like things are changing daily on the COVID-19 front, you're not alone. It's a struggle to figure out what the best plan of action might be from day to day regarding vaccines, boosters, masks, and socializing. The good news is those changes are because we're learning more about this virus every day as well. We talked to an expert to sort out all that confusion.
I couldn't get out of the bed. I couldn't move.
And one of the confusing issues surrounding COVID vaccinations is the issue of breakthrough infections. They're still rare, but more common than they used to be. We talked to a man who's been through that and seen the danger firsthand. And as the refugee crisis on the Mexican border just seems to get worse every day, a group of medical volunteers are bringing a little comfort, hope, and love to the desperate.
This is the prenatal clinic. We serve all the families that are pregnant.
Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. As much as we'd all like to think that the COVID-19 pandemic is over, the evidence shows otherwise. Just last week, we heard the troubling news that the COVID pandemic is now officially the most deadly outbreak in recent American history. Deaths in the U.S. have now topped the fatalities from the 1918 flu pandemic. Joining us now to talk about all things COVID is emergency room physician and UCLA professor, Dr. Matt Waxman. Good to see you again, Matt. Thanks for joining us. And let's talk a little about some of the information that's out there, some of the things that are right in your kind of scope in the emergency room, the things you're seeing. First of all, let's talk a little bit about this issue of one vaccine being a little more long-lasting than the other between Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. Why don't you talk a little bit about that for us to get us started?
Sure, Hal. Thanks for having me back. This week, we got some information regarding the protection against hospitalization when comparing patients who got the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine. And we found out that based on this one study, that the Moderna vaccine may be slightly better at protecting against hospitalizations in patients who had two shots. And what they did was to study patients 4 months after their second dose and see if you had a breakthrough infection, who is more likely to be hospitalized. In the group that got the Moderna shot, it may be 10 to 15% more effective at preventing those hospitalizations. You know, that said, the patients in the Pfizer group, they had gotten vaccinated earlier, they may be a little sicker, and that may account for the difference. We both know these vaccines are tremendously effective.
But you know, somebody might be sitting out there right now saying, wait a minute, I got the Pfizer vaccine, and should I be concerned?
Hell, I got the Pfizer vaccine. My family has gotten the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm confident that the vaccine is effective. You know, going back 2 years ago when we started talking, we didn't have a vaccine, and 50%, 60% effectiveness against hospitalization was our goal. We've really exceeded that. We're at 80, 90%, even with the Pfizer vaccine.
This was always kind of a work in progress, wasn't it? It was always kind of like, let's get it going. Let's get it in the arms. We got the emergency authorization, and let's see how long lasting it is. Let's see if it's going to have to be like a flu shot where we have to have a booster each year. That's always sort of been the working theory, right? Kind of a work in progress.
Absolutely. You know, in the past, it's taken 10 years to develop any sort of vaccine. When I worked on the Ebola pandemic in West Africa, it took about 5 years. We've had a vaccine in about a year and a half, and we're learning more every day. And even in the healthcare front lines, we struggle to keep up with all the research that's coming out.
But when we talk about, you know, the flu shot, we talk about each year getting what in effect is a booster, isn't it? So now we're talking about boosters and whether this person should get it or that person over 65 should get it or somebody with an, you know, a compromised condition should get it. So where are we in that debate right now?
So where we're at is it seems the Biden administration recommended everybody getting a third dose who got a Pfizer vaccine or a Moderna vaccine. And the FDA and the CDC work sort of in partnership to make recommendations. And their recommendation this week was to limit the third dose to patients who are over 65, patients who are immunosuppressed, patients who have had recent cancer, transplants, chronically sick. And the rest of us who are moderately healthy can sort of wait. And I think one thing that went into this calculus, which is really important to take into account, is that this is a pandemic. This is a global phenomenon. And there are still patients all over the world, especially in Africa, that haven't had a first dose. So we're really trying to get everybody fully vaccinated who's healthy before we give a third dose.
But how does that square with the notion that this vaccine may be 93% effective after so much time, and this one may be 88% effective after so much time. And as the effectiveness rate goes down, shouldn't we be looking at that with regard to a person getting a boost?
Absolutely. And I think that's borne out in the third vaccine that's approved in the United States, which is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The benefit of that vaccine is that it's only one dose, and it works differently than the mRNA vaccine. That one-dose vaccine, we know this week that if you give a second dose, then you really become 100% effective. You're very, very close to the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine. So yes, we are learning that there are differences between the vaccine, and what we learned this week is that the Moderna vaccine may be slightly better.
Okay, kids and vaccines. We've been waiting. Now we're starting to get to sort of the edge of the cliff on that, and bring us up to date.
Sure. So in this phase of the pandemic, we're seeing a lot more kids who are unfortunately sick with COVID. And one in five children currently this month are part of the new cases. And that's very different than where we were at the beginning of the pandemic. We saw very few sick kids. Thankfully, there's far less kids than adults, and that has not changed. We found out Monday that the Pfizer vaccine, they released some study data that the vaccine was highly effective and safe in kids who were 5 to 11 years old. And a lot of parents, including myself, really welcome this information.
There are parents, though, who still push back on this and you know, don't particularly want their kids to be vaccinated. And I want to just take one quick minute here to talk about ivermectin. I mean, that's out there. That's something that a lot of people think is effective. Is it?
Hal, I saw a patient recently, and the patient's wife was clutching a box of ivermectin, and her unvaccinated husband was literally dying of COVID. And I think for me, that really crystallized the situation. This is an anti-parasitic medicine that I have used in other countries in the world and used it here to treat parasites that really has no scientific evidence for treating coronavirus.
All right. Thanks. Don't go away, Matt. We just need to take a little break here. And coming up next, we're back with Dr. Matt Waxman to talk about breakthrough COVID infections. We've all been hearing about that. And we're joined by another guest who knows far too much about the subject after experiencing one of those breakthrough cases himself. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Hal Eisner. We're back with Dr. Matt Waxman, and joining us is Sandy Stern. Sandy is a local writer who also, a couple of months ago, ended up with one of these breakthrough infections. So, Sandy, tell us a little bit about what happened to you.
Well, I had my second Moderna vaccination in May, and on my birthday, which was the 13th of July, six of us in the family sat together in a restaurant, and all of us were vaccinated, except my 10-year-old granddaughter. And we had a nice meal. Following that, 3 days later, I started having a really bad hacking cough. I couldn't stop. And then my son, who was also at the dinner, called to tell me that he tested positive. He was sick. I got a fever. That fever stayed with me. And finally, my son drove me to the emergency on Wednesday, the following Wednesday. And I was there 5 hours. They sent me home. I remember nothing from the time I got home until I opened my eyes. My son was calling my name. I was lying in bed wearing the same clothes I wore when I got home from the hospital. And it was Saturday at 2 p.m. I couldn't get up out of bed. I couldn't sit up. So they took me by ambulance to the emergency room. I was there for 8 hours. They transferred me to ICU, and I was there for a week. Fortunately, they did not have to ventilate me, but I didn't need oxygen. It was like someone was smothering me with a pillow. It's the worst feeling I've ever had in my life.
You feeling okay now?
Yeah, it took a while. They sent me home finally with an oxygen tank, and I used it for about two weeks, and then I stopped it, and I haven't used it since. And I gradually got my strength back, and I've got about probably 80% of my lung function back, because I had COVID pneumonia.
Wow.
And a lot of scar tissue.
Matt, let me ask Matt. I mean, is it common to have this kind of a, it sounds to me like a fairly intense breakthrough infection.
So a severe breakthrough infection, which we define as a patient needing hospitalization, such as Sandy, is extremely rare. You know, the CDC this week released some data saying that breakthrough infections in general are about 10 per 100,000 fully vaccinated patients. That's 0.01% of all vaccinated patients. And Sandy's case is even more rare as he required intensive care. I'm happy to hear he's feeling better.
Sandy, I got to ask you, I mean, do you feel that the vaccine helped you, or if you hadn't had the vaccine, we might not be having this conversation?
Oh, without the vaccine, I would be dead, without doubt. My son, who's 52 years old, also got sick, but he got over it within a week. But I'm 85, and I think that was the reason that. And I think I also got hit by the Delta variant, you know, so.
You know, Matt, I'm sure there's a question or two rolling around your head as you listen to Sandy talk about this thing. 85 years old, getting slammed with an intense breakthrough infection.
Yeah, my question is what we were talking about in the previous segment, is that Sandy is the perfect patient to get a third dose and really get a booster dose. And I agree with Sandy that he was protected by his vaccination. It probably saved his life, given him some immune protection. But given his age, he needed more protection, which is what the CDC recommended early this week.
Well, you know, you hear the stories from people, and it does make you pause for a second. And so, when you talk to your friends now, do you shudder a little when you hear them say they're not vaccinated?
I don't hear any. I don't have any friends who are not vaccinated. Everybody I know has been vaccinated.
And clearly, Matt, your reaction to that is a nod of the head, I see.
I'm nodding ahead because, you know, one thing that we are extremely frustrated about on the front lines of healthcare is we're now offering vaccines in emergency departments such as mine to the unvaccinated. And we have a fair amount of patients who are still resistant to vaccination. And I consider, you know, patients to be oftentimes my friends. I'm trying to listen, but it's been fairly frustrating.
Sandy, what would you tell people out there who are vaccine hesitant?
You know, I would tell them to look back at measles and diphtheria and polio, and we had no trouble getting vaccinations. People flocked to get the vaccinations, and we wiped out those diseases at the time. And for people to hesitate to get the vaccine now, especially with a disease that is so deadly, it boggles my mind. And you know what? It makes me angry, because basically what those people are doing is they're toying with other people's lives.
All right. Well, why don't we end on that note? And thank you, Sandy. Glad you're okay. Matt, good to see you again. Thanks so much. And coming up next on Fox 11 News and Death, we're going to have a segment very close to Matt's heart. We take a look at an organization of medical professionals who are doing their very best to help out with the current refugee crisis. I will tell you that what's coming up is very significant. We'll be right back. There's no secret about the crisis at the border. We've seen all the videos. The situation there is only becoming more dire by the day as desperate refugees gather at the border. More and more every day, the COVID crisis rages on. But providing hope to the hopeless, along with medical care, is a group of volunteer health care providers from the United States and Mexico. The Refugee Health Alliance is a nonprofit that provides free health care for migrants in Tijuana. Joining us are the co-directors, Dr. Hannah Janeway. She's an emergency physician at White Memorial Medical Center. And Laura Vargas, she is a physician's associate, and she's at the the West L.A. Veterans Administration, right around the corner from us here. And I'm so glad you're here with us to tell us about what it is you're doing down there at the border. And starting with Dr. Janeway, why don't you explain the program, what's happening, and, of course, the crisis down there at the border?
Yeah, of course. As you have seen the images recently, the situation is getting more and more dire every day, which means that we have increasing numbers of patients We are a free healthcare organization that treats all vulnerable patients at the border. Most of them are migrants who are here waiting to present their asylum claims. We don't just provide basic healthcare to adults and children. We also have a midwifery program. We work with local Mexican midwives who help give birth. And we have a lot of programs that treat the social determinants of health. So we have a food insecurity program, a water program, a hygiene program, just to name a few things.
Dr. Matt Waxman, who was just on the last couple of segments, very involved in this program, very supportive of this program. And Laura, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do? And I gather you've been down at the border.
Sure, yes. A lot of us split our time between our full-time jobs here, whether that's in LA or in San Diego. And we try and help to run all the parts of the nonprofit. It's kind of a remote thing, and also as much as we can be down in clinic in Tijuana as well. We partner with a lot of local organizations, as Dr. Janeway mentioned. We work with the midwives or parteras there, with Jimena Rojas, and with some people who also assist us in providing street medicine and harm reduction at the different shelters in the different areas. And we also work with specifically marginalized populations, not only just the migrants, but also those that are double marginalized, the LGBTQIA, and provide support as we can to all the different shelters. Right now, we're working with about 30 shelters all over Tijuana.
Dr. Janeway, have you ever seen a situation like what we're seeing down there now?
I don't think so. I actually think the situation is worse than 2018 when we first started doing this work down here. Just because the border is completely shut right now, no one's able to cross it. And there's increasingly numbers of things that are creating or forcing people to migrate, increasing violence, increasing climate change. And so we're seeing a buildup that's occurring at the border right now.
You talk to the people down there. What do they tell you? What is their mental health? What is their situation right now, Laura?
Yeah, so they're really struggling with many, many things. So we try and practice from like a trauma-informed care model within the organization. We try not to relive those traumas with the patients, but we do provide support as we can with our mental health program as well. We try and have therapy sessions and different things to help them cope with the situation that they're dealing with and how they're living in these shelters in such close proximity with so many different people, but there's really nowhere else for them to go. And so right now, it's not just Central Americans that are in Tijuana, but many Haitians and people actually from all over the world that aren't native to Tijuana, which is adding to a lot of the problem and the lack of resources there to support everybody.
Dr. Janeway, I don't gather you ask each person about their ethnicity or their this or their that, although there is information I'm sure you need to be able to deal with their health issues. But we see so much and we hear so much about the Haitian refugees. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Haitian refugees and migrants are people that we've worked with since the very beginning of the organization. There's actually quite a large number here in Tijuana, and we've worked with a lot of groups like Haitian Bridge Alliance, which is an amazing organization, to try to provide care to them. A lot of what we've had to do is really reorient our organization to be able to provide care in their language, so in Creole. We have employed people from the community to help us bridge those gaps, and we've tried to provide as many services as possible. But as you know, in Haiti, they've taken a lot of hits recently. They've had the earthquake, they had the president. And so I think we're seeing increasing numbers of those individuals who are, fleeing from unimaginable conditions.
Hey, Laura, it strikes me that when you're in a crowded area like that with all these people there, and you've got COVID out there as well, that's got to be a concern. Is that a concern?
Yeah, it's a really big thing that we've been dealing with. There's many, many things specifically with things like scabies outbreaks as well, but also currently right now with COVID and how to structure the reverse isolation for patients, making shelters so that if there is any risk of someone being infected, that we are able to maybe shut down that shelter. And during that time, people can't go to work or come or leave the shelter while we're trying to get past whether that is a small outbreak of COVID or just upper respiratory infections because of the close living proximity.
Dr. Janeway, I know as a nonprofit, you're always looking for support and for help, and I gather you have a website and probably sort of an appeal to people out there.
Yes, absolutely. We always need help, whether it's just you want to volunteer with us. We take all sorts of volunteers. There's many things to do. And then, of course, we always need monetary donations, especially with the increasing need. We're trying to right now open up our new hygiene center that would provide fresh potable water, showers, and toilets to the 5,000-person encampment that's two blocks away from our clinic. Those people have no access to running water. They have no showers. And recently, we've been treating a lot of skin and super infections from very basic illnesses like varicella. So if you have any money to spare, even if it's a dollar or two, I usually tell people, feel free to go to our website. It's www.refugeehealthalliance.org/support us. Or you can just go to our website and click the donate button.
All right, Dr. Janeway, Laura Vargas, thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck down there. Best of luck. Sounds like you've got a pretty tall order to try to deal with. And we appreciate your being with us. That's it for this segment. But coming up, we'll be right back with more. Don't go away. And finally, if you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell? And it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehowpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. And before you go, let's watch a video shared with us by the Refugee Health Alliance. We'll see you next week, everybody.
So if you can please consider helping us give people back the hope that they so deserve.